Next case for argument is Houston v. St. Joseph. Mr. Lund.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Jeffrey Lund on behalf of the plaintiff appellant in this case, Ms. Jessica Houston. Your Honors, we're here today to on our appeal of the District Court's decision granting the defendant's motion for summary judgment, finding that there were no genuine issues of material fact with respect to whether our client, Ms. Houston, was retaliated against for expressing her protected rights. The purpose of the appeal, the focus of this appeal, is under the direct method. And obviously, as this Court is well aware, to establish a direct method case, we have to identify three things: that our client, Ms. Houston, engaged in a statutorily protected activity, that she was suffered an adverse employment action, and there's a causal link between the two.
What other than the timing are you relying on for the causal link?
Your Honor, the suspicious timing, obviously, and I think to not get off topic, I want to address that later. I think the District Court also missed some other issues as to whether what was the statutorily protected activity. But in addition,
in addition to that,
Your Honor, we think there are inconsistent statements. And this Court has indicated in a decision this past year in July of 2007 that we can rely on various circumstantial evidence in proving a direct method case, including but not limited to suspicious timing as well as inconsistent statements, so on and so forth.
What's the inconsistency?
Your Honor, in this case, the record, there's testimony in the record here that the decision maker, Ms. Goddard, who is the supervisor of Ms. Houston, it indicated that the her position all along is that in early June or sometime during the course of the summer of 2004, she had taken over this position and evaluated it and made a decision that at some point she would have to restructure the job. There's no evidence whatsoever of that, Judge. The only evidence there is...
Where's the inconsistency?
Well, the inconsistency is, Judge, that she makes she says this decision was made in June of 2004, or early summer of 2004, yet no requisition form was submitted to restructure this job until October 7th of 2004, right after the protected activity took place. Well, it's inconsistent, Judge.
It gets back to your timing problem. She makes a decision and implements it later, and you'd say, well, she implemented it just, you know, she decided to implement it when she was having this disagreement with Houston. That's just a timing issue. That's not an inconsistency.
Well, in other instances,
I thought you were arguing that, you know, first she tells Houston that she's going to call her back and she's just restructuring the job, and then she says, well, actually, you were an annoying, I forget her exact words, but you were a difficult
employee. You were rude, yes, Your Honor.
And she wouldn't have, I thought you were saying she wouldn't have continued her on the PRN roles, if you will, if there had actually been a performance problem.
And we are saying that, too, as well, Your Honor. And forgive me if I didn't get to completely articulate what the other inconsistencies were. An additional inconsistency in our eyes, Your Honor, that is circumstantial evidence, is that upon termination, or we call it termination, in October of 2007, the job was restructured. Now, the testimony that's in the record by the supervisor was, in my eyes, Ms. Houston, this was not her last day at work. Upon direct questioning by opposing counsel, in my eyes, this was not her last day. We considered her to be a PR and a employee who was going to be called back at some point in the future. The reality is that in the same breath, the supervisor advised coworkers explicitly that they are not to call Ms. Houston back, that they were to go to her instead, and she would find someone to fill in that place.
And
we
you
think
have
that
this
is
from the direct affidavits of these coworkers.
Yes, we do, Your Honor. We provided those. Those were before the district court upon its ruling. We also think another inconsistency, Your Honor, is that in her testimony at deposition, the supervisor indicated, again, not to reiterate, but to say, we don't consider her to be this her last day. I didn't consider it. I anticipated fully to see her back again because she was a PRN employee, and that's what they are, as needed. That being said, she was never called back after she was put on that status and ultimately terminated in April of 2005. And the Ms. Goddard, the supervisor, checked the box that she was ineligible for rehire. At deposition, she indicated she was ineligible for rehire because she was rude. But in her deposition testimony, she qualified that by saying, well, I considered her to not be, that she was not her last day because she was eligible for rehire. I see that my time is up. If I could finish my train of thought or...
No.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
I'll give you a minute later.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Brunner?
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Tom Brunner on behalf of the Appalachian St. Joseph Regional Medical Center.
Mr. Brunner, I have a question for you that deals with Ms. Goddard's reason for the action she took. On page 4 of your brief, where you're talking about Ms. Goddard's interest in restructuring this position, it's the halftime position that Houston and Williams have been sharing as PRN employees, you make a statement that strikes me as extremely bizarre, which is, using two PRN employees also was not consistent with the Surgical Services Department budget, which included the position as a regular position with benefits. Well, of course, it costs more for a company to, or a hospital or anybody else, to fill a job slot with an employee who's receiving benefits, probably at these wage levels, or it could increase by a factor of 50% the cost. And so she's essentially saying, we weren't spending enough money, and so I wanted to spend more money so that I could get rid of Ms. Houston. And, I mean, my assumption is most people don't just sort of go out and spend more money. So it struck me as a very strange rationale.
Your Honor, if I might respond, the rationale was based on what she testified at her deposition and also indicated in the declaration, was her implementation of what she believed over the course of her 23-year career to be the business policy of the hospital.
Which is to waste money, or what?
No, Your Honor, but to, if there is a regularly scheduled position, that it should be staffed by a regular part-time or full-time employee.
But that why, in the absence of any evidence that the sharing with the PRN employees had resulted in unsatisfactory coverage? I mean, usually when we're taking inferences in the light most favorable to the non-moving
Certainly.
Party, and I have no trouble imagining how somebody might see this as a rational statement too, but it seems very odd to say if everything is going along very smoothly, we've just decided we're not spending enough money, so let's bring in somebody. Usually you see companies going the other way. They fire part-time employees with benefits and they substitute somebody without benefits.
Your Honor, in further answer, she was new to this position, the supervisor was. She was the new director of surgical
right,
services.
Right, but you've emphasized she has 23 years experience.
Correct.
So let's be consistent here.
Well, and in you know, hopefully being consistent, looking at the positions that were new to her, that she had not supervised these people before, she said, well, these are not PRN positions, they're regularly scheduled. And we want to be able to ensure that these people will be there when we need them. PRN employees, as indicated, are called as necessary. They have the right to turn down an assignment.
And is there any evidence in the record that Houston and Williams had failed to cover surgical scheduling on any occasion?
I don't believe there's any evidence in the record, Your Honor, but it's the nature...
That would be very pertinent, wouldn't it?
I would respectfully disagree. I think what is pertinent is the category that we're dealing with, which is PRN. They don't have to be there unless it suits their schedule rather than the hospital's. For these two college students, full-time college students, who are filling this one half-time position, PRN position, it was convenient for them to trade off on what their schedule would be, but their supervisor didn't know who would be in that location at any given time. And based, again, on her experience, she said to herself, this has to change.
But it's just fishy to think that this has been going on for months. She comes in. She finds out about this. It goes on for another period of time through the summer of 2004. Not until October does she submit the job requisition form, which just happens to be right after Ms. Houston has done the only thing you can do in a co-employee harassment situation, which is to complain. You know, the law is very clear. There's no vicarious liability for an employer unless you alert the employer to that problem. And the flip side of that is you can't retaliate against people even if they've made a mistake about what actually counts as harassment.
Certainly. Your Honor, it's uncontroverted in the record that the decision to make this a regular part-time position occurred in June of 2004. There is no contrary evidence in the record, in part...
But how can you say that when in fact, the timing... Yes, you have testimony from Ms. Goddard that that's what she thought, but when, in fact, nothing happens until after the complaint, that's circumstantial evidence that maybe she's lying. We're required to accept full credibility on all affidavits from the company and zero from others?
Your Honor, when we consider the status of discovery in this case, Ms. Goddard was deposed at length. She could have been asked, when was the decision made? She was not. That question was answered in her declaration and also in her deposition. The combination of her deposition and her declaration was uncontroverted proof that decision was made in June.
But how can you controvert other than thinking that somebody's lying? I've looked inside your brain and I've decided that actually you had a different thought in mind. I mean, how do you do that? Other than through circumstantial evidence of when it actually comes about.
Your Honor, if we're talking about timing and whether there is, I see that my time has elapsed, if I could complete that one thought.
It would be odd, wouldn't it, for a judge to ask a question, not expecting an answer because the red light was on.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That means you can answer it.
Right.
Briefly.
Temporal proximity has been a subject of discussion by this court and by this panel as well on numerous occasions. The closest temporal proximity would be 13 days. The longest would be approximately 6 months. We think under either circumstance, if circumstantial evidence is created by that timing, we would suggest that circumstantial evidence is not created, which is strong enough to overwhelm the fact that the uncontroverted evidence in the record is that the decision was made on June 21st. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brunner. Mr. Brunner. So, Mr. Lund, we'll give you another minute.
Very briefly, Your Honors. We disagree, obviously, with the questioning from Your Honor. It is controverted. It is not uncontroverted. At the same token that they claim we didn't provide any information or anything in the record to indicate that the decision was not made at some point earlier, nor have they provided any information other than we believe to be self-serving affidavit testimony that it was made sometime in June. This is a 23-year veteran, as they call herself. There are no emails, there are no memos to the file with respect to indicating that the decision had been made. The only evidence that we have to rely upon is a requisition form submitted in October of 2004, soon after the complaints were made by Ms. Houston. We believe that is suspicious timing. But it's not just suspicious timing alone. We think there are inconsistent statements, as I elucidated earlier, the first being that a deposition, which was a lengthy deposition, Ms. Goddard indicated that I considered her to be an employee who would be called back, yet she advised two coworkers to never call her back. I see that my time is up. So we would ask this. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel.